Okay. So, just a few remarks on why we should want to have a course in data analysis. Well, as I said, back in the origins of SUPA in 2005, 2006, I had thought it was a good idea because it was something that, you know, surely everyone doing a PhD, even if you're not doing data analysis yourself, would need to know a little bit about it. And maybe partly why this wasn't an instant popular choice is that whether it's due to Mark Twain or some say it's Benjamin Disraeli, there's this phrase around, there are three types of lies, lies, damn lies, and statistics. So statistics and data analysis has not always had the most popular reputation in science, or indeed in the wider public. A lot of people think it's just all boring and you can prove almost anything with statistics if you know what you're doing. I think in the physical sciences it's especially important because a lot of what we're doing in data analysis involves quantitative algorithms or recipes. You know, we're not just interested in making qualitative statements. We want to work stuff out. We want to work out, well, you've all heard the terminology, I'm sure, before, significance levels and numbers of sigma at which a certain result is claimed. And you've got to understand what all of that means, because sometimes the numerical algorithms that we use, think of them as recipes, sometimes those recipes don't work. In fact, very often in the physical sciences this can be an issue because you're maybe dealing with weak signals, what we call correlated residuals, terminology that if you don't know what that means already, you will very soon today. And more often than not, that leads us to make incorrect assumptions about the model that you're applying to analyse your data. And that can result in a particularly insidious type of error called a systematic error, which again I'm sure you've had some experience of as undergraduates, whereby no matter how often you repeat the observations or somebody else repeats the observations on your behalf, that error will not go away because it's a fundamental flaw in the method of analysis rather than necessarily in the data themselves. So what you've got to get better at doing is thinking through what those possible systematic errors are. There's no longer a straightforward answer at the back of the book because you're all going to be doing work that involves maybe analysis that no one else has ever done before. So you've got to be alert to the kinds of issues that can cause those systematic errors. Now fortunately there's lots of help at hand, and one particularly good textbook that was around when I was a graduate student and is still going strong is called Numerical Recipes. Now this is useful for all sorts of purposes, not just data analysis. It provides you with code to do a lot of sort of workhorse things, to do a lot of donkey work in calculating functions, in trying to organize data sets before you even do any data analysis. And more, because computer packages are getting better, you maybe don't need books like this. Because if you're using something like MATLAB, how many people here use MATLAB, for example? Again, fair number, or there'll be other equivalent packages that others might use. Well, often, those computer packages will have software built in that will do a lot of what you need to do in data analysis. The big trouble is, if you don't know how that software works, then you might not be aware that it's introducing systematic errors. So, you know, I think even if nowadays computer packages can take a lot of the pain out of applying these methods, it's still important to have at least a rudimentary understanding of how the methods work. So that, above all, is what this course is about. And indeed, as the great Yoda once said, you must unlearn what you have learned. Sometimes you've been taught data analysis so badly as undergraduates in physics labs and things. You know, again, can't speak for Glasgow in that respect. Naturally, of course, we teach it right here. But in terms of other institutions, I'm sure your experience of labs maybe is a bit variable from place to place. And sometimes what you've been taught is either just plain wrong or at the very least substantially incomplete. And I don't know whether I'll do any better, but I'm certainly going to try in these next 2 days to give you a more solid and broader grounding in what data analysis is all about. Areas like what I work in cosmology and astrophysics, where you can't set up an experiment, you've just got to make do with what the universe gives you. In other words, you can't ask, well, what happens if we change this? What happens if we make that galaxy a bit brighter or a bit older or a bit closer or a bit further away? You can't do that. You've just got to analyze the data that the universe gives you, and that results often in particularly difficult systematic errors that need extra special care to deal with. But even if you're doing laboratory-based physics, even if you're doing theory, there'll be a particular set of issues that are relevant to your area. And what I seek to do in these 2 days is not to look at specifics examples too much, but to try to give you generic tools which should be applicable to any area of the physical sciences. So to summarise all that, I'm already a couple of minutes behind schedule, but I'm sure we'll get back on track. Even if you'll do little data analysis yourself, even if you think you're going to be doing pure theoretical work, you're going to have to analyse results which are out there in the literature for your field, which have been derived using data analysis principles and techniques. You'll encounter terminology, like I've already mentioned, things like significance, things like, you know, the number of sigma at which a result is claimed, which you've got to understand. You've got to understand what that means. And as I was remarking a few minutes ago, in recent years we've seen a big shift in the paradigm that physical scientists are using to carry out a lot of that data analysis. It used to be almost exclusively in what was known as the frequentist approach. I'll explain what that means in a few minutes. Whereas now, there's a growing tendency for analysis to be in Bayesian inference, as we saw from the number of people who'd heard those terms before. So even if you're not going to be doing Bayesian data analysis yourself, there's a good chance that some other people in your field might be into that already, and it's quite good if you can understand what they're on about as well as the more traditional frequentist methods. There's a lot of good books to back up what we're covering. The two that I'm probably drawing from most in the material I'm putting in the slides are this one by Phil Gregory. This was just hot off the presses in December 2005, just before I gave the course for the first time, but I think it's still pretty current even today. There are others that have been published since, but I can strongly recommend this one. And here's from Phil's preface. He talks about being in the throes of a major paradigm shift in our understanding of statistical inference based on Bayesian probability theory, what I've just been saying. And he views his book as an attempt to help new students make the transition from more traditional classical statistical methods, at the same time exposing them to some of the essential ideas of the frequentist paradigm that will allow them to comprehend much of the current and earlier literature and interface with his or her research supervisor. So in other words, even if your supervisor is a dyed-in-the-wool classical frequentist in terms of their data analysis approaches, very traditional, then you can be the person that helps drag them kicking and streaming into the 21st century to Bayesian methods. Because as I said, whatever your field in physics, there'll be somebody somewhere who's beginning to apply Bayesian methods to that field. Here's some other books. Again, I won't dwell on these, but there's references where you can download a synopsis of them from the web, from Google Books, or indeed get the book themselves if you're interested. And let me just end with Mark Twain again, echoing what I said a few minutes ago, which is, here's what he said, which I absolutely don't want you to follow. He said it's better to keep your mouth closed and let people think you're a fool than to open it and remove all doubt. Believe me, there are no foolish questions in data analysis. There are often, you know, the question that you think is a really foolish one might be one of the most profound, because it's thinking about the problem in a way that maybe no one else has before. So if you've got any questions at all as we go through these 2 days, please fire away. Don't sit there suffering in silence.